Well, that was an action-packed half. Just time for a round of applause for composer Ian Farrington for his fantastic jazz piece earlier. And you may have spotted a tune, I Got Rhythm, by George Gershwin in there as well. Thank you, Ian. And thanks again to Tasmin Little, who saved the day along with Gromit with that rather magnificent rendition of Gromit's double concerto for violin and oud.
Well done, now.
We did it!
A regular little Puccini, aren't you, Gromit?
So we'll see you after the interval for a matter of loaf and death.
You really will. That was the conductor of the Aurora Orchestra, Nicholas Cohen. Well, that first half was amazing. As a fan of new music, I was really bowled over by Gromit's double concerto for violin and dog. I was going to make a Bach and Offenbach joke there, but of course I won't. So, as Nicholas was saying, we're returning 20 minutes when our plasticine chums are back with their film A Matter of Loaf and Death. But first, in the spirit of our concert, we take a radio journey with the poet and former Children's Laureate Michael Rosen with his interval feature, Wallace and Gromit, A Feat of Clay. Earlier, Michael visited the Aardman Studios in Bristol, where he uncovered some of their putty secrets, and we join him as he enters their hallowed portals.
Who is it?
Michael Rosen from the BBC.
Come in.
I've come to Bristol, to the Aardman Studios, to meet Nick Park, the creator of Wallace and Gromit. And up there on the wall, I can see a huge poster for the pirates in an adventure with scientists. Let's go plundering. That seems to be a cue.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow, here we are. Look, a giant Wallace. Oh, he's as big as me. And he's sitting, he's just holding his hands in that very pernickety way, like he's just about to explain something to Gromit. Gromit's sitting in a chair, not really listening. Gromit's looking right up into the sky. Oh, there's the penguin. Just better be careful of him.
What? Oh, it's you.
Hello, my name's Merlin, and I'm the creative director of Wallace and Gromit.
So, we've got plenty to talk about. I'd love to see the studios and how you put all this stuff together, how you put this particular show together. So, do we go upstairs, downstairs? Where do we go?
We go out the back to the big studio.
Oh, right. It's like a shed.
A big shed.
Yes. Yeah. I once went to Oliver Postgate's shed, and it really was a shed. Mm. It was just a little shed with string. I think yours is probably a bit bigger than
ours. Ours is an old banana ripening warehouse.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We've got a big open plan office. We're going past two killer rabbits. And then, a windmill. Now, where does that one come from? Remind me, did I miss this one?
Gromit, it's a bomb! The cake's a bomb!
And something like that that's got movement. Mm. Do you film it moving or do you stop frame that?
We'd stop frame that.
And this is a technology that goes all the way back to the beginning of cinema, doesn't it?
It really does.
Say Méliès, so, who was putting...
Méliès, Willis O'Brien, and then Ray Harryhausen, they all perfected essentially the arts that we use today. The core technique hasn't changed, just the technologies with which we capture the images has changed.
Yeah, so when we see King Kong, part of King Kong, that was stop frame. Ray
Absolutely.
Harryhausen, Jason and the Argonauts.
It's our heritage, thanks to them, that we have a vibrant industry.
And let's do a little bit of boasting about the BBC. Tony Hart messing around with Little Morph.
Yes.
There he was with plasticine.
Absolutely. I mean, Morph is a big part of Aardman. And a lot of the older animators cut their teeth. I started on Morph. Nick Park started animating Morph. And so it's really a big part of everybody's life here.
Could I just say it was quite sad when Morph just disappeared into the... tabletop. He would be one moment there, and it was, if you were responsible for that, I think I actually have a bit of a grudge.
To talk to the boss about that.
Yeah, well, I will, because the sight of Morph just sort of disappearing into a pool of plasticine was quite disconcerting for some of us.
He didn't come back?
Well, he did, yeah. Now you point that out, yes.
But at the time?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's quite dark.
Yes.
So indeed. Mind where you're putting your feet.
Right.
We'll go on in.
So why have we got several cubicles?
Okay, so we call these units, and each unit would house a scene. In a moment, I'll take you through, and we can see all the Wallace and Gromits that we've got. We have more than one.
Oh,
each.
No! I don't think you should have said that. More than one Wallace and Gromit. It's not possible.
So, let's just take a look in here.
Oh, no, Michael, please what? Don't. No, not in there.
How about this one?
Yeah, please do, yeah.
So there's Gromit, no Wallace. Oh, he's with somebody. Who's he with, Merlin?
He's with Julian Knott. He composed the Wallace and Gromit theme tune. They must be helping Wallace out with his new composition.
Not bad, Gromit. Didn't you? Well, the first thing you have to do is you have to decide what style you're going to be in. For example, do you want to be in a sort of modernistic style? Do you want to do a Webern? All right, well, this is more fun. What about Boulez? Okay, Gromit, so you think that's too jumpy and loud. Remember the proms audience? Ah, brass band, right. Well, of course, the good starting point for brass band is some umpah. So do you want to just give me your paw, Gromit? Do this. Right, you have a go. No, have another go. Come on, have another go. Very good. Now, the next thing you should do is have a go at putting a melody on. Melodies are good because what you need is a little hook that repeats all the time. So what we have in the Wallace and Gromit tunes is... Of course, what we do is we repeat it all the time. So that's what you should do. So put a little melody on top of that umpah. Have a go. Very good. Do you want another go?
Yeah, there,
please
I
do
can
come
see
in.
You've got a beautiful little set. I'm just going to cross. Oh, I'm holding him. Oh, my goodness me. I'm actually holding a Wallace, and I can feel his armature, and he is made of plasticine.
Yes, modelling clay.
That's his head coming off.
Yeah, and his head and hands are always modelling clay.
Yeah.
Wallace's tank top is made of a resin, and that's because the pattern on it is so... details that if it was made of modelling clay and you grabbed it, it would get squished. And while you could do that, it would just take so much time to re-sculpt it that we found it's much, much more effective to have it look like modelling clay but be made out of a resin. And his sleeves and hands and Wallace's face are all modelling clay because those are the expressive parts of him, and it's very important that we maintain that.
And those eyeballs, you can move those around, can't
yes.
you?
So the eyeballs are made of resin, they're a resin bead, and so I've got this little tool here that I can stick into his eyeball. If you're squeamish, look away now. And I poke him in the middle of the eye and move his eye to the required position and then take my little pin out.
And then you can get... Can I press
please
down
do,
at
please
the
do.
Top
make
of him to
cross,
make him...
Yeah.
This makes him cross, does it?
Yeah, there you go.
I know you're doing this for my own good, but the fact is, I'm just crackers about cheese.
And then what do you do? Leave the nose as it is?
Leave the nose as it is, and then if he's speaking, you take his mouth off, and we've got a whole different set of mouth shapes. So when you need to animate speech, you record the dialogue first, and then we have that sound broken down into 25ths of a second, so that the animator knows exactly what phonetic sound is coming out of the character's mouth.
Huh?
And we then have a box of mouths with mouth shapes in. So you might have an oo, or an ah, or a...
Ooh.
And we know that if he's saying hello, the first shape's going to be a heh, it's quite a tight mouth shape. And
you're
then you
grinning
have,
when you're saying
yeah,
that, that's a hello.
And then your jaw drops and your mouth stays tight and wide. And then you have L, who you will need to put an L-shaped mouth in, with your tongue sticking out maybe on a more graphic character. And then O, like that. And
oh.
The timings of those mouth shapes will be dictated by the speed at which the word was said. So it might not be a change every frame. You might have your L on for 3 frames and your O on for 5 frames. And the animator will have to work to those timings so that it looks convincing when the character speaks.
Looks convincing, but massively complicated because, you know, when we say a word, quite a lot goes on at the back as well as the front. When you've got the frontal stuff, that's fine. But when you say gurgle, you know, the
front of my... Well, that comes from the physical performance. So when you laugh, maybe if you're going to go, your body rocks before you actually say anything because you're taking in a breath. And when you do that, your body bounces, and it's less about the shape of your mouth and more what the body does. And that's the skill of the animator, to interpret that and give the character that movement so that as the audience you understand it.
How long does it take for an animator to learn to say, animate, hello everybody, I'm here today, and hello Gromit? I mean, how long would it take an animator to get that on the face?
When animating Wallace and Gromit, average about 2.5 seconds of finished screen time a day. That's per animator. But in order to get to that level, it's a craft skill, and it takes years and years and years. I mean, it's hard to put an actual figure on it, but I'd say 4 or 5 years would be about right from being a junior animator before you sort of are let loose on hero character animation.
And as you said, I absolutely love that this is old technology. This isn't CGI. I know you sometimes use computer-generated imagery in some of the major features, but the idea that this was something that the old people right at the birth of cinema used, I mean, it's very special, because, I mean, nearly everything has changed in cinema, but this is something from right from the birth of cinema.
We kind of like to go one step further, and we don't get rid of the thumbprints. We really like to see the thumbprints. We like people to see that it's been handmade. We don't try and polish it and make it look really shiny. There's something about the grittiness and the solidity of it being physical, and it's a big part of the whole Wallace and Gromit look and feel.
So I'm going to surrender Wallace back to you so that we can take a little closer look at the set there, because that is, it's like a, oh, something quite, quite beautiful. Just to get the idea of the size of it, we're looking at what's almost like a Pollock's paper theatre. It's about, oh, I don't know, 3 feet across, and we've got a bench, and because Gromit is playing the fiddle beautifully. He's got his head to one side, he's got it tucked under his arm. Wallace has got a pair of cymbals just a little close to Gromit. I'm not sure Gromit's going to be too happy about those cymbals clashing. I think he's going to be patient, but not too happy about it. The music's on the bench, but some of it's scrumpled up. Somebody's not too happy with the composition. And then, perhaps a bit incongruously, we've got a drill, cogs, and some kind of electronic box. So this is not just music going on here. There's several other things.
Yeah, Wallace, he likes to compose where he's most comfortable, and where he's most comfortable is in the workshop. So he tried doing it in the living room and in the kitchen and outside, but the place where he gets his inspiration is down in the workshop. So that's where Wallace went to find the notes within himself.
And did he know that Gromit could play the fiddle perfectly?
Well, Gromit's always messed around with music, and especially the fiddle. It's been a sort of a little hobby of his through the years, and he's only too happy to help Wallace out whenever he needs a bit of advice on music or rummage through his collection of LPs.
Excellent. And there's some gaffer tape in there as well, I think, isn't there, just in case anything falls apart?
Gaffer tape does hold most of the studio together, so it's fitting that there's some in Wallace's studio.
We've got a kind of cyclorama at the back there. It says stage door. Mm. We're at the back of the...
We are backstage or below stage at the Albert Hall here. Yes, so this is Wallace and Gromit getting ready for the big performance.
So where are we going now?
We're going to get in the lift and we're going to go and see the big cheese, Nick Park.
Oh, right, the Wensleydale himself.
Mm-hmm. Le Grand Fromage.
Yeah.
Going up. Second floor, doors open.
Nice to be guided by Wallace even in the lift, isn't it? It's good. I like that. Le Grand Fromage, il est là.
Here he is now.
Here he is.
Nick, come on in.
Yeah.
Wonderful to meet you, sir.
Hello. Nice to meet you too. Yeah.
Wow, fantastic. Right, we're now up amongst the gods. We've been down in the banana ripening factory, and seen Wallace and Gromit ripening beautifully down there.
Yes.
And I've actually held Wallace. I've held a Wallace, and he's damp, isn't he? To the touch. The modelling clay. It's got that just slightly tacky, damp feel, which is kind of appropriate, I think, for Wallace, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the beauty of it, really. It's the traditional stuff you used to play with as a child, that it's oil-based so that it never dries out. And it always remains, a little, like, oily, I guess. You know, it's sort of always a bit malleable and... not like something that dries out and becomes like pastry.
So, how did this particular project come about, this one, the proms?
Sir Albert Hall himself called up, in fact. So Wallace was quite chuffed about that. And to write a concerto, which, of course, Wallace always takes a challenge.
How do you rate him as a composer?
Not that highly, to be honest. But, you know, thankfully, Gromit was able to step in. Gromit especially just constantly surprises me with what he's got up his sleeve, you know, what talents he has.
Yes, I can't help wondering, you know, because of the mystery that perhaps, you know, we'll never find out, really, that what Wallace composed. You know, your mind, you know, maybe he uses sort of variations on Rule Britannia or variations on... You have a sort of feeling I have about him that he would be good at that and maybe not quite so good on... sort of a Mozartian kind of area.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, he has a rather kind of mechanistic approach to most things, so it would probably involve brass in some ways and steam, I would have guessed.
Lovely cheese. I could just wash it down. Oh, I was just coming, lad.
So going right the way back to the beginning, Nick... where and how did Wallace and Gromit appear?
Well, they actually go back to my days at film school and art school to sketchbooks. I'm an avid keeper of sketchbooks. And I really had this, when I was trying to think of my graduation project at the National Film and TV School, I had this idea that it was a basic gag, really, was of this rather stupid guy that builds a rocket in the basement of his house. And the gag was that, well, that was it really. And I was going to have the rocket take off through the middle of the house in this kind of northern terraced row. It kind of developed from there, really. He was going to have a kind of sidekick, which was a cat at the time, called Gromit. When it came to making Gromit out of clay, I just found it easy to make a dog, really, because the limbs are longer and I could get my fingers around the different parts of him to animate him.
And were you a model maker? I mean, could you... was that something you had always done from being a child? Or?
Oh, yeah, I guess it starts a lot younger, really. I was always wanting to be a cartoonist. I wanted to work for the Beano when I was about 8 or 10 years old. I loved drawing cartoon strips. And then one day I discovered that my parents' home movie camera could do stop-frame animation, like one frame at a time, where you just move the thing, take a picture, move it again, and so forth. And so I tried drawn animation in sketch pads. I tried... cut out in paper or cardboard, and there was always modelling clay around the house, so I just animated anything I could find, really, and I kind of translated my characters into models quite quickly, and I was a fan of Ray Harryhouse and...
Jason and the Argonauts.
Jason and the Argonauts. The Wombles, you know, Noggin the Nog, you know, the Clangers, all that kind of thing, Bagpuss. And so I just emulated, and Morph, of course, and so I just emulated all these things.
There's something godlike, isn't there? You know, if you think of the descriptions of the creation of Adam and Eve, and in the Jewish tradition, the creating of the golem or the golem, it's Promethean, isn't it? The idea that you can create life, and we do, just in life and sex, but actually to animate inanimate objects was a dream for thousands of years of people. They've created these myths of taking clay and turning them into stuff that could move. It was like something crazy and wonderful. And then the movie industry basically were able to do this, something that had been prefigured in myth.
It is incredible. I mean, that reminds me of the days when I would do some animation on 8mm at home, and then, you wait 2 weeks to get the film back, sort of thing. And I remember just with my own simple version of Morph,
projecting it onto my bedroom wall and watching it. It would flicker at, you know, 18 frames a second. And I just would watch this thing that I'd made actually moving in real time. And I remember being awestruck by it, that I couldn't believe that I'd done that and that there it was moving like a real thing. So it was like a real magic, like a real movie on the wall sort of thing.
I once worked with some children who took the word eat, put some teeth on the letter E,
yes,
and the E ate the other two letters. Yes? Right. So they moved with clay, flat on a table, shot it, and so the letter E then ate the A and the T, and then the E kind of went... so funny and so clever, and that they'd done that. And again, there was a sense of magic that, you know, the letter E, that letters could eat each other. It's that magic, you know, and I think in part children must sense that about the things that you make, that you've made these objects and you can see their objects.
I mean, ever since before I got involved with Aardman as well, I remember people saying, you know, everyone would go and see Disney films and before the days of computer animation, where you're talking about quite sophisticated techniques, where you're not really asked to look at the technique itself, and really elaborate films, you know. But as soon as they saw Morph, they'd say, oh, that's really clever, that Morph, even though the Disney films are probably far cleverer, really, with all they have involved.
So what's coming up in the second half?
Well, we're going to see Wallace and Gromit's latest short film, A Matter of Loaf and Death, which is half an hour, and it's going to be to a live orchestra.
Oh, right, that's like silent movies in the old days where there was a live pianist.
Yeah, and all the music is, of course, from the Wallace and Gromit composer, Julian Nott.
So is this something that might be seen elsewhere? Can it go on?
Well, yeah, I mean, if this is a success, we're hoping it's going to be taken up all over the world as a kind of travelling roadshow. You know, maybe we'll get a call from Sir Sydney Opera House or someone like that and take it around the world.
So might we see Wallace and Gromit on stage, or do you think they'll stay in the dressing room?
I think they'll stay in the dressing room because they do suffer from stage fright a little. They're a bit shy of standing up in front of people. You know, they're technicians. You know, artists, I guess, really.
Yes, no, I can see that about them. I was just slightly worried that the penguin was down there. I found myself just slightly just uneasy about that. There's no danger that the penguin would turn up and wreck things in any way, is there?
Are you sure he was there? I thought he was...
I saw him downstairs in the main entrance. He was just hiding behind...
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, you missed him, did you?
Yeah, have you alerted security about that?
On the way out.
Okay.
Don't worry. Security has been alerted, but you can never be too careful with that penguin, can you? Wallace and Gromit, A Feat of Clay, was presented by Michael Rosen and produced by Neil George. Welcome back to part two of our Wallace and Gromit Family Grom here at the Royal Albert Hall. In this second half of the concert, we're in the hall, we're going to see a screening of the film A Matter of Loaf and Death with, for the first time ever, live orchestral accompaniment from the Aurora Orchestra, conducted by Nicholas Collin. The music is composed by Julian Nott. It might help those of you at home, or those of you in the Albert Hall with your eyes shut, if I give you a synopsis of the film A Matter of Loaf and Death. So, our heroes, Wallace and Gromit, are running a bakery in a small, unidentified northern town, when a serial killer starts to murder all the local bakers one by one. While Wallace and Gromit are doing their bread delivery round, they spot a runaway bike. Wallace immediately recognises the cyclist. It's none other than the beautiful Paella Bakewell, who he remembers from years before as the Bakelite girl in a TV flower advert, floating through the air light as a feather in the Bakelite hot air balloon. But now, as her brakes have failed, she's in deep trouble. A short ride on a fast machine, if you like. Wallace and Gromit leap to the rescue, and they save Paella and her dog Fluffles from a snappy end as they hurtle towards the crocodile enclosure of the local zoo. Wallace is immediately smitten. Gromit, meanwhile, checks the brakes and they seem to work fine. He senses something fishy. As romance develops, Paella virtually moves in and fills the house with flowers. But all is not as it seems. When Paella forgets her purse, it's Gromit who's sent out in the rain to return it to her house. While there, he discovers mannequins with baker's hats on and a photo album with pictures of Paella with all the murdered bakers, 12 of them.
One to go for a baker's dozen, and that one will be Wallace. So, it's Paella who's the serial baker batterer. At this point, at home, you may feel free to hiss and boo. To avoid being found, Gromit has to hide in Paella's house overnight. When he returns home, he finds that Wallace and Paella have got engaged. He tries to warn Wallace and protects him with security devices, but Paella is too quick for him. She pretends that Gromit has bitten her, and Wallace chains him up. With Gromit out of the way, Paella attempts to kill Wallace, but he's saved by Fuffles, who you'll remember is the dog. Paella is furious, and for a moment, her mask slips. She reveals that she hates all bakers. Again, booing and hissing may well be in order here. But Paella quickly recovers, and she brings Wallace a present of a tea time cake. Wallace is taken in and forgives her. But this is no ordinary cake, as Paella has hidden a bomb in it. Determined not to be thwarted again, she manages to capture Gromit and Fluffy and lock them up. However, they manage to attempt to escape in the bake or light hot air balloon, but will they get to Wallace in time? I'll leave you to decide. You may never decide. I hope you do. Here. In a moment, the intrepid Nicholas Collin will come back on stage to conduct the Aurora Orchestra in a live performance of music with the film A Matter of Loaf and Death. I always think there's something a bit frightening about bakers anyway, the way they stand there in those aprons in very hot rooms. Ah, here's Nicholas Collin coming back onto the stage to conduct the Aurora Orchestra, and he isn't wearing a baker's apron, I'm pleased to say.
Welcome back. Now, many of you will know Wallace and Gromit's latest adventure, A Matter of Loaf and Death. But this afternoon's screening will be the first of its kind. The film will be accompanied live by our very own Aurora Orchestra. So sit back, fasten your seatbelts, and please give a big round of applause for A Matter of Loaf and Death.
Thanks, Chuck. Oh, Oh dear. Another baker. Battered with his own rolling pin. Huh, would you credit it? Still, looking on the bright side, I suppose it means more business for us, eh, Gromit? We're on a roll, lad! Good day, Wilbur. Well, target. Gromit! Did you see who that was?
Help!
She's in trouble!
Oh, help! Help! Help!
Here, Gromit, take the wheel! Cakes, lad. The wholemeal fruit on me knees. Oh. I should have tried the granary bowls. Oh, hey. Madam?
Oh, I do apologise.
Oh, it's an honour to be of help.
I must get those brakes seen to. We're so grateful, oh, Miss Nuffles. Nuffles!
Oh, it was nothing. Oh, what a lovely little doggie.
My name's Paella. Paella Bakewell.
Oh, I know who you are, Miss. Light as a feather, you're the baker-like girl.
Oh, that's me.
I'm Wallace. I'm inbred myself.
Oh, really?
Are you still ballooning, Miss...
I do beg your pardon.
Oh, no, I mean the Bakelite balloon. Do you still fly it?
Oh, I see. No, not anymore.
Well, back to the grind, as it were. Goodbye, Miss Bakewell.
Oh, say au revoir.
Oh, oui, madame. And bon appetit.
Bye.
Oh, the Bakelite girl. Fancy that, Gromit. It's not every day you meet the girl of your dreams, is it? Oh, well, this isn't going to put bread on the table, is it? Oh, hello.
We were just passing by, going for a walk, and Fluffles insisted on dropping in, hoping you would join us. Please say yes. She'd be so disappointed. Wouldn't you, Fluffy? Wouldn't you, Fluffy?
Oh, well, if you insist. But I'm in my work things.
I like a man in uniform. Come on. Walkies!
Manage without me, won't you, lad?
Oh,
Love is a many splendid thing, Gromit, but it doesn't half tire you out. I'm cream crackered. Oh, heck! Pyola's purse. I must return it forthwith. Gromit?
Funny. I'm sure I heard something. Oh, there it is. He must have been there all along. Early night, Fluffles. Big day tomorrow. Our final baker is nicely buttered up. Sweet dreams.
Oh, hello, stranger. Where have you been? Hey, wait, hold your horses. I've got something to tell you first, old pal. Haven't we, dearest?
Of course, my little cheesecake. Wallace and I are engaged to be married. Till death do us part.
I think congratulations might be in order, lad.
Oh, I can see he's dying to give me a great big kiss. I know we're going to get on like a house on fire. One big, happy family.
Come in, my sponge cake.
What's going on?
You'll have to forgive him, my petal. He's been a bit security conscious of late.
Well, you can't be too careful these days, can you? What with a serial killer on the loose?
Oh, yes.
A nice spot of cockaliki soup.
Oh, smashing! I've got just the bread to go with it. Hey, what the? That dog. Smells delicious.
Oh, I do hope you like it, my short crust. It's my own special recipe.
What the? Hey, what are you playing at, lad? This is getting ridiculous.
Oh, Wallace, he just wants a bit of attention, that's all. Now, my little hoochie-woochie, let Auntie Paya sort you out. Ow! Ow! He bit me!
Hey?
I was just trying to help and he bit me, Wallace.
Gromit! How dare you bite my betrothed? That's very impolite.
Oh, don't be too hard on him, Wallace, please. Just a little punishment, that's all.
I'm surprised at you, Gromit. I really am.
Oh, Wallace, my sugar dumpling. Have you got a mo?
Oh, on my way, my cupcake. You'll not leave this kitchen till you've done every last one. I don't know. Taking a bite out of my lovely fiancé. It really is the limit.
I'm such a silly sausage. It just sort of fell off my foot.
Stay well back, my precious. Leave it to me.
Oh, you're so brave, Wallace. My minced pie.
It. Huh? Oh! Are you all right, my flower? Oh, flower! Get it? A flower?
Get your hands off me! I hate flour, I hate bread, and I hate bakers! You utter and complete fruitcake!
Oh. Oh, that's a bit steep, isn't it, my sweet?
Fluffles? I want a word with you. Back home.
Oh, thanks, old pal. I just don't get it. One minute they love bakers and the next minute they hate them. And I'm not a fruitcake, am I, lad? I suppose you can't be everybody's cup of tea, can you? Oh!
I'm so sorry, Wallace. So, so sorry. I don't know what came over me. Apart from the flower, of course.
Oh, yes.
Let's forget about it. Here's a cake to celebrate. Oops, must be my keys.
Celebrate?
Us, getting back together again, you gooseberry fool.
Oh, yes, of course. We could have that with our 4 o'clock tea. Won't you join us?
Oh, I would. Fluffles isn't feeling too well. Why don't you two celebrate? Must fly.
Oh, roll on 4 o'clock, eh? This'll go down a treat. Grommet.
I'll deal with you two later.
Come on, lad. What's keeping you?
At last. My 13th. My baker's dozen. And curse that prevailing southwesterly. They'll be there in no time.
I'll strike a light. Oh, there you are. I think these matches are a bit damp. Ah, yes. It's one of those junk candles, lad. Where are you going with that? Grommet, it's a bomb! The cake's a bomb! Wait a minute. You don't think Paella could be...
the serial killer. Well done, Wallace. Sharp as a brick. Now do exactly as I say or Fluffles get snuffled. Once too often, you treacherous little...
Get that thing away, lad! That's it, lad. Use your loaf. You're the baker-like girl.
Was the baker-like girl. I ate too much, you see.
Oh, really?
I couldn't ride the balloon anymore.
Oh, dear.
So they dropped me.
What a blow. Oh.
Me! A curse on bakers and their loathsome confections.
Grommet!
Huh? What?
Lad. It has. Come to Mummy, Fluffy Wuffy. Oh! About me, lad. I'm fully in control. Ah! 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 Yes. No. Anyone seen the bomb? What?
Bon voyage, Wallace. Your bombs are as good as toasted.
Grummy! I've got a bomb in me pants. Help me, Grummy. Do something. It tickles! Farewell, my angel cake. You'll always be my Bakelite girl. I think I need a cup of tea after all that. Care to join me, you two? Never mind, lad. We've both been through the mill this week, haven't we? But at least yours wasn't a bread-hating, baker-murdering serial killer, like mine. Lad, let's go and deliver some bread, eh? That'll cheer us up. On the wheel, lad. Concentrate.
happy ending for Wallace and Gromit. The evil pail of Bakewell, too heavy now for the Bakelite hot air balloon, sinks into the crocodile enclosure at the zoo and is never seen again. Meanwhile, Gromit's new doggy friend Fluffles joins them on their baker's round and everything gets back to normal. Music by Julian Knott, performed live by the Aurora Orchestra, conductor Nicholas Collin. And the audience are going wild in a family kind of way.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, it's hard to keep up with Wallace and Gromit, but I think they appear to have got through unscathed from this afternoon's adventure. What a wonderful time we've all had listening to such fabulous music and watching our friends on the big screen. Few thanks. Let's have a special round of applause for the composer of the music for A Matter of Loaf and Death, who's here today, Julian Knott. And that tune's going to be going around in your head for a few days. We're delighted that here with us this afternoon are the creator of Wallace and Gromit, Nick Park, and creative director Merlin Crossingham. And a huge round of applause, please, to our very own Aurora Orchestra. A couple of other people to thank, and you know who they are. But before we say thank you to Wallace and Gromit's violin, I think they might have a few words to say.
You really should take more care of this, you know, lad. It's priceless. Go on, lad. Open it. It won't bite. Well done, Pooch. Oh, yes. We'd just like to say a big thanks to all of you for making this such a cracking concert. Yes, really was cracking. Oh, fiddle. Ever thought of trying the bassoon, lad?
In a kind of comedy disaster, as Wallace sat on Gromit's precious violin. The audience are applauding wildly here for Nicholas Collin and the Aurora Orchestra. What a fantastic afternoon we've had. We've been taking pictures during the afternoon concert, and I'm pleased to say they'll be available very soon on the BBC Proms website, which is, of course, bbc.co.uk/proms. Nicholas Collin is receiving a bouquet. It doesn't appear to be made of bread, but perhaps it is. It's nice to see Nick Park here, of course, the creator of Wallace and Gromit, 20 years ago today. I bet he never thought when he first started that one day they'd star at the Albert Hall. It's been a wonderful, wonderful afternoon. Don't forget, you can listen to it for up to a week after broadcast on the BBC iPlayer. And perhaps next time something different will happen in the film, because you never know with that kind of thing. Well, that's all now from the Royal Albert Hall. I'm off for a loaf of bread. I'll hand you back to David Cornett in Broadcasting House.
And that was Ian McMillan. And as Ian said, you can listen again in high definition sound from the Radio 3 homepage. Perhaps you've got children who are at the concert this afternoon and they'll be able to listen again. Well, we'll be going back to the Royal Albert Hall for our next prom this evening at 8 o'clock, when Mark Elder conducts the Aldborough World Orchestra in music by Britten, Mahler and Stravinsky. And that concert will be previewed at 6:15 this evening. That's in, 40 minutes' time or so, in a Proms Plus event, which will be broadcast live from the Royal College of Music.
On Radio 3 from the BBC Proms, two iconic American works. And two composers from the old world harness the emotive force of the African-American spiritual. Tippett's A Child of Our Time, alongside music by Ives, Zimmerman and Samuel Barber. Wednesday night at the BBC Proms, starting at 7:30.
Well, coming up next this afternoon, one of BBC Radio 3's new generation artists will be performing. She'll be singing in Elgar's Sea Pictures. That's coming up in about 1/4 hour's time. And before that, guitar music. Music not written for guitar, it was written by Johann Sebastian Bach. It's the Chaconne from his Partita No. 2 in D minor, played by Michael Kendrick.
Thank you.
Michael Kendrick playing the Chaconne from the Partita No. 2 in D minor by Johann Sebastian Bach. Well, it's 11 minutes to 6 now. This is BBC Radio 3. Time to meet more of the best in young musical talent. Over to Clemency Burton-Hill.
Hello and thanks for joining me for the next in our series here on Radio 3, exploring the current breadth of talent on the BBC New Generation Artists Scheme. If you were listening to our Taster programme a couple of weeks ago, you'll have heard mezzo-soprano Jennifer Johnston singing Schubert. Tonight, our focus is back on Jennifer, as she's joined by the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra and conductor Martin Brabins to perform a single work, Elgar's song cycle, Sea Pictures. The cycle consists of settings of 5 poems by various authors: Sea Slumber Song, In Haven, Sabbath Morning at Sea, Where Corals Lie, and The Swimmer, which all evoke a range of moods from the tranquil to the tempestuous. Elgar was criticised at the time for using songs which some felt verged on the edge of drawing room balladry, but the work has proved enduringly popular with mezzo-sopranos. I caught up with Jennifer recently and asked her why she was drawn to the cycle.
The Sea Pictures lies very much within my core repertory, really. There aren't very many cycles like it, certainly in terms of its scale. Full of variety, full of colour, full of change from movement to movement, and actually very beautifully written for the voice. Certainly Elgar understood a lower female voice. It means that you can sing it without too much pressure. You know, it's a bit daunting to start with, but actually wonderful, and I would happily sing it over and over again. The BBC Scottish Symphony are an extraordinary orchestra, but also it was a total joy to work with Brabins. He's amazing and totally understands English repertoire and the ebb and flow that you require in Elgar. It was a real privilege to work with them on it.
Well, here they are now, BBC New Generation artist Jennifer Johnston with the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra conducted by Martin Brabins in Elgar's Sea Pictures.